Well, welcome everyone to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We have Larry, James, and Kirk all gathered this evening. How are you, fellas?
Good evening, guys.
Doing good.
I don't know if
the last time we had talked,
but I can't get the chat room to load.
Oh, really? I don't know. I'm seeing it here, so BTR's got more glitches than Dode had here on his head. When we last spoke, it was a Friday evening. We did not know that that Saturday night that a gun would be responsible for killing some 50 people and that the shooter would be hate. But nonetheless, that appears to be what has occurred. The Senate is meeting now not to craft a bill on how to deal with Muslims acting out jihad, but instead how to constrain the ownership of guns. How many times
the gun got up
to be
shot at people itself, didn't it? It acted all on film.
Must have. How many of these killings have to occur with people confessing to the crime, screaming out Allahu Akbar, before someone says, you know, there's a common denominator here. Maybe we've got a problem with Islam. But, you know, this is something that should have made Donald Trump, you know, infinitely more popular. He was right. And yet he has lost some 10 to 15 points in the polls while everybody else lies.
It is amazing.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a time where I was more pleased that I wasn't doing radio than after this occurred, when I heard all of these numbskulls blame hate, blame guns, blame homophobic behavior, when the sole motivation was Islam. It is indeed sad, but it's going to continue to get worse because we are going to see more and more of this. You know, one of the things too that not a single person that I listened to on the radio and television had to say is that, you know, Daddy Omar, who is a nutcase, he's pledged allegiance to the Taliban, claims to be the president of Afghanistan. You know, he is, as a loyal supporter of the Taliban, he is a fundamentalist Muslim wacko. He said, oh, this had nothing to do with religion. This he saw two men kissing, and it made him sick. And so he's responding to these two men kiss. And you know how many commentators said, wait a minute, the dad's from Afghanistan. What is the national pastime of Afghanistan?
Bocce ball.
Oh, bocce ball. Yeah, you're right. Bocce ball means boy play.
Mm-hmm.
It's the men of the community picking out the cutest young adolescent boys, stripping them naked, chaining them to beds, and gang raping them. And so you want
to
tell me that
rape little boys, but it's not okay for two grown men to consensually kiss. Just making sure I understand Islam here.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I will tell you that if I see two adult men kiss, it creeps me out. It does. It creeps me out. I don't care if they're homosexual. I don't care if they're gay. I don't care if they're bisexual, transgender. Whatever they want to do in the privacy of their own home, I don't have a problem with. I don't want to see two heterosexuals making out in public, and I most certainly don't want to see two gay men kiss. But, you know, my response to that is I would give them a nasty look. I would try to sneer and show my disapproval, and then I just walk away.
I just turn and walk away.
Yeah, just walk away. But the Muslim, no, had to go with his little wifey, who, of course, he beat to a pulp, and canvass the nightclub so that he could attack this typical Muslim attack. He comes in armed to the teeth. The people he was shooting had no weapons. And that, of course, is a soldier of the Islamic State. Yep, he's a really a brave dude, man. I'm going to go in with
that. A man after Muhammad's own heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to go in with my guns blazing, and I'm going to shoot people that are defenseless and unarmed. And boy, will I make my God proud. And
I'm
so sick that they take credit for it and celebrate it.
Now, just a little slight aside, 300 men in this club.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's got to reload. Nobody can throw a chair at him and throw him off, or three or four people throw chairs or bottles of whiskey or something at him and get him?
Yeah. Yeah. 300 men in the club. You know, and you look at
just
it.
Just around 300 men in the club.
Right. The police were called and notified there was a shooter inside of the club that was shooting people 2 minutes after he arrived. But 3 hours later, the police were still outside. I mean, what on earth were they doing? He was holed up in a bathroom, you know, talking to the 911 operator. And we want to praise the response of law enforcement for their great courage and hand out medals. Well, I tell you what, we deserve our fate.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it. You know, and then they, you know, Donald Trump made the comment. He says, you know, one of the problems with the Islamic community is they don't turn over those who are prone to jihad, so that their attack can be thwarted. And of course, the FBI chief says, "Oh, that's not true." And he gave three examples of the FBI. He says has a wonderful relationship with the Islamic community and goes to mosques all the time. And that there are three very specific cases where somebody in the Islamic community told the FBI that this person is has jihadi ideas, and they arrested him and convicted him. In all three cases, you know what they were they're planning to do and what they were arrested and convicted for?
No.
Going to join the fight with ISIS. Now, if you were sane, wouldn't you just let them go and never come back?
Why not?
I just let them go. Well, that is that's where we find ourselves. So it's.
Well, doesn't the no-fly list mean that the guy's daddy, that now he and his mother are put on the no-fly list, so they can't even get out of town? Can't we just put him back on the list so he can fly out of town?
Oh God, yes. Please.
I mean, what is wrong with this? Where is our brain, our collective brain? Why doesn't anybody use fundamentalist Muslim? Why do they keep doing this radical, like it's radicalized?
Yeah.
You can't get radicalized. You either buy Muslim or you don't. You buy the Quran and you don't.
Right. The Erdogan has said it over and over again. There's no such thing as a peaceful Muslim. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. There is no such thing as a radical Muslim. It's just Islam. There's one Quran. There's one set of hadith collections. There's one Muhammad, one Allah, and it's all the same. And the only difference even between Shia and Sunni Islam is who's in charge.
Yeah, who's in charge.
Right. It's like what's the difference between Orthodox Christianity and the Roman Catholic Church. The only difference is who's in charge.
Exactly.
And when you're dealing in a situation, Larry has just says, "I'm on the line." Yeah, I'm wondering what happened with Larry. We're not getting. And we got another issue.
I got him live. I saw his number pop up, and he should be live now.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Am I on?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, I want to intervene here, and I realize it's your show. I have to tell you, these hoaxes that are being pulled, that's why the cops weren't in there for 2 hours. It's all part of the act. I have seen these, you know, they have a thing called crisis actors. I have a video that shows a woman, and I'm not kidding you, as a witness on CNN at Watertown, at Boston Bombing, at NTSB, she's a passenger. And it's Sandy Hook. Her child is a victim. This is getting outrageous. They have a triple whammy they're looking at. One, gun control. Two, gay rights. And three, more militarism. It's an act.
Yeah.
I am telling you, I've got a video where the guy is getting carried out. And get this, as they're carrying him out, somebody screws up with the camera, and they're carrying him towards Pulse, not out of it. And then, as soon as they think they're out of camera shot, guess what happens? They set him down, and they're all smiling at each other. Now, why do you use crisis actors, and why are they there at a real event? I want to ask you guys that.
You know,
I have researched this. I have videos on all of them. I've had it with this nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, these guys go out and they perform these giant killing sprees, and yet it turns out it's a facade. You got this guy, Robbie Parker, at Sandy Hook, and then his dad, Alan Parker, at the Virginia hoax, where the woman was killed live on air. It didn't happen. I can prove it. It has become, you know, the media controls the people in the same way religion controls the religious matrix. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's about time that we call it what it is. Come on, guys. I can prove every bit of it.
Yeah. It's certainly the response to what happened in Orlando was incredibly unprofessional at the absolute very least. And that it
happened at 2 o'clock. By 2:02, it was on all the media. How did that happen?
Correct.
Remote viewing?
Yeah.
Was it CIA remote viewers knew this was going to happen?
And 3 hours later, the cops finally stormed the facility, and to this day, they have not shared how many of the people killed they killed.
Do you know one of the women, the woman who claimed her husband, her son, who had all the gay, he was bringing the gay rights community and the straight community together. He had won awards and everything, couldn't manage it here. Said, we need to get rid of assault weapons. That was the second thing out of her mouth. And the third thing was, well, where's your son? We don't know. He's missing. They can't identify anyone. Well, you know, last I checked, and you can go down here to Jack's Beach, and you can go to any nightclub probably in Cincinnati, and I promise you that you have to have an ID.
Yeah.
So they can't ID the victims, but they all have, you know, their ID in their pocket.
Yeah. Of course.
I mean, this is stupid. Let's stop playing their game.
And it took 3 days to get the names of the deceased.
There won't be any graves.
Nobody can be that. I'm with you up to a point.
Let me ask you this: how does an Iranian guy follow ISIS? You know, they're at war. You know, ISIS wants the Iranians dead before they want us infidels dead. You know that, right?
The killer was the son of Afghani.
I understand, but they said Iranian at first. Now it's Afghani.
They can't keep any
of their story straight, because when you're making the story up, you don't have to.
His dad not only was Afghani, his dad pledged his allegiance to the Taliban, and his dad claims to be the president of Afghanistan. You're dealing with absolute nutcases, but the bottom line in all of it is that we are going to elevate gay rights.
Gun control.
The Senate right now is trying to pass legislation on gun control, as if their guns had anything to do with it. And by the way, there is no such thing as an assault rifle. There's no such thing.
Not in America.
It's a 100% made-up class that they randomly categorize weapons.
Right. There's no such thing as an assault rifle. And in addition to that, long-barreled guns are only responsible for about 1% of murders.
Smart.
With gun-related murders. So they're simply a symbol. And you know, Clinton calls them weapons of war. No, and I own an AR-15. It is not a weapon of war, because if it was a weapon of war, it would be fully automatic.
Yeah, and it's illegal to be fully automatic. And by the way, even in war, most people, you have a selector switch on an M60. You can go to three rounds or one round. I've really, really had it with the act. We shouldn't play into the act, because, you know, if something happens at 2 o'clock and then suddenly five media stations are there at 2:02, what are they doing there? And what are crisis actors doing there? I mean, that is the question, isn't it? Why are they at Watertown? Why are they at Sandy Hook? Why are they at the Boston bombing? Why are they here? I mean, I want to know.
Because they're everywhere. We've become a military state.
Well, and no, so these are the same actors.
It's far more, yes, far more military, far more police, far more arms and militarization of the police, far more interconnection, interactivity between the police and the military, far more invasiveness from the CIA and the FBI and the National Security Agency, far more propaganda and lies, far more elevation of the gay rights community, and far more lip service to embracing Islam. I mean, I must have heard that he had been radicalized 100 times, and that he was an extremist. No, the opposite is true. I mean, you do not call the Pope a radicalized Catholic. He's a fundamentalist.
No, he's either a Catholic or he isn't.
Right. He is a fundamentalist. And fundamentalists and radicals are exactly the opposite of one another. And so even those that will connect Islam to the incident will not just say Islam. They will say radical Islam. And there is no such thing. But what this all shows is that political correctness as the indoctrination of that moral code in politics and the media and in academia has rendered the vast preponderance of people stupid. And so
there's another aspect. There's another aspect, by the way. There's another aspect to this hoax. And that's, we're going to need bigger militaries to go after these guys.
That's right. Yeah, to go after ISIS.
So then you got really four things going on: political correctness, the homosexual rights agenda, gun control, and bigger military. And,
yeah,
and
how is our military support of the in Yemen turn out? And in Somalia, how did that turn out? How did it turn out
Iraq.
In Beirut? How did it turn
about
out
in
Afghanistan? How did it turn out in Iraq? How did it turn out in Syria thus far? How does it turn out in Libya?
Everything you told them at the White House, and you did, Craig, I know this for a fact,
yeah.
Everything you told them came out exactly the way you said it would. And, of course, they are not stupid. They knew it would.
Yeah.
You know, you stood there and presented evidence to a guy like Jerry Falwell. This is a perfect example.
Yeah.
And at the end of 4 hours, he's got his best Hebrew scholars, he's got his best Greek scholars, and this is before you were even good at this. And they said, we agree with you 100%, and you're absolutely right, Craig, but if we spoke the truth, you would be a conspiracy kook, and I would not get the money I get to fund my college. That's what he told you.
Yeah,
and this is the world.
At the end of my day, the envelope's full of money to support my college, which is not coming. And if you say any of this, they'll label you a kook.
Yes, yes, you're a nut because you share Yahweh's words. Well, you know, I've had it with this matrix that they throw out there. They throw a mass shooting incident, and then the same people. You remember the Batman caper, the Batman theater act that they did?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, here's a guy that went into the courtroom, and his lawyer happened to be a dead teacher from Sandy Hook. I mean, I got a video that shows it. I mean, you know, it's all over YouTube. They're actually giving out crisis award actors awards. It's done as a joke, okay? But you see them at all these different mass shootings and murders and mass murders, and they're the same guys. One guy is a fireman in one place, and then he's a victim in the next. It is unbelievable to me that people are still eating this stuff up. And just as government, part of it is government. Just as religion needs to be exposed, these lies from these propaganda. You know they set up the propaganda ministry under Woodrow Wilson. They need to be exposed too. And that's all the more I'm going to say about it. But it, to me, it's outrageous because it's so out front. Hi, I'm Robbie Parker. And he's going, oh, I'm up. And then he gets a sad face and he goes, I want to talk about my daughter. Your six-year-old daughter was murdered. And you're yucking it up. And you, oh, I'm up. And then you get the sad face and walk up and give a television interview. How insane is that? It's not even possible. You know,
it's the same thing in a different way that happened in London, where the extreme socialistic, communistic, pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel woman, Jo, was gunned down by a neo-Nazi who had severe psychiatric issues. And so Cameron, the Prime Minister of England, goes to eulogize her and says the best way that we can celebrate her life is to embrace her values of community and all exclusiveness and of acceptance.
And you go, let's turn a star into a star. Wow.
Yeah.
It's just insane. The whole act is just getting old. You know, we know we're marching down to the year 2026. And as we do this march, we're going to see more and more of this garbage.
We are.
More and more regulation.
Far more of a police state, less and less freedom,
yes.
More and more indoctrination, more guns pointed against us, more spying and deprivation of our privacy. More artificially slandering good people who are trying to tell the truth, and massive degradation in the ability to think of the population. I say this all the time, but it is the ultimate way to witness how incapacitated people are to process information and render a reasonable decision is to go out and drive. And I don't care where you're driving. You can't drive 10 minutes without encountering at least one, and usually two or three people, who have done something unbelievably stupid.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Driving is a complex thing. That's why it's interesting to watch, because you have to be observant of what's happening around you. You've got to be able to process information. You've got to be able to relate to other individuals and understand, you know, process closing speeds and that sort of thing. And I almost never go out where I'm not just dumbfounded by the stupidity of people.
Oh, well, me too. You got the one driver that's behind the other driver. I'm a fast driver. But, you know, I found early on there's two types of people. You got a person that controls their car, and then you got a person that lets their car control them. They're usually afraid, and they're very dangerous. And, you know, you'll go up, everybody's doing 80. Suddenly, you all have to slow down to 60 because you got a clown driving by in the fast lane by somebody who's just puttering along.
Yep.
And they do this, and they cause accidents, by the way. These people are insane. William called me today when I was working, and he was with one of his associates. He was an atheist. Okay? And he wanted me, because I had grown up in an atheist household, to talk to the guy.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, I presented this guy with, you know, there's seven lights on a menorah, there's 22 almonds, do the math, it's pi, there's seven types of light. How could anybody have known this back then?
All right.
I did the math on the why it is that 6 days equates to 14.7
right.
billion years.
Yeah.
And do you know none of this sunk in on this open-minded atheist because he's an irrational boob?
Right.
You know, and that's what we're dealing with out here constantly. So, you know, the government tells them something. Can you imagine, really, that at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's this big mass murder. Cops stand outside until 4 o'clock in the morning before they even enter the place. But by 2:02, the media is there. And then they've got people being carried out, supposedly. And then when you see the camera angle, they're actually being carried towards Pulse. And then when they think they're out of camera range, you see them get down. they got these this blood red on their this and this, and then they just get down there just walking around like a normal person. Have you ever seen anybody that's been shot?
Were there any pictures ever taken inside Pulse?
No, of course not, because there's no dead bodies in there. This is all part of that act.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't kept up with the Pulse thing.
It is an act.
We've had a lot of the Sandy Hook, and there are absolutely pictures of people who were both parent and policeman in the same picture, and they're also identified as people who are SAG members. Two-bit actors.
Oh yeah, they're yeah, sure they are. I've got 100 of those videos I've watched. There's not even a question. Do you know in the FBI statistics how many people were killed in that county last year? Or the year of Sandy Hook?
No.
Zero. Now, don't you think that would be in the FBI statistics if it were real?
To what length would you think these people will go through the government? I mean, we know historically.
There's no length they won't go to.
What do I do to get us into a war?
Well, you just answered your own question.
To do anything that they won't do. And I don't know how many. I don't know where they aggravated this guy and sent him in and kind of set him up so he would shoot all the people, or was there some half of them?
No. I don't believe it.
But our government is willing to lie about big things. Like, for example, the Lusitania was deliberately sunk to start World War One. The Maine to start the Spanish-American War. The Gulf of Tonkin was a complete hoax.
Vietnam
to,
at the Army War College today as a false flag. Taught as a false flag at the Army War College. That's a fact.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question about this stuff.
Even once you get into these wars on false premises, like for example, World War II, when we got in because of the bombing of our base in Pearl Harbor. The only reason they succeeded in bombing the base in Pearl Harbor is because everybody that was anybody associated with the military was out playing golf, and nobody was on duty, and they ignored all of the warnings. And if you wanted to deal with the Japanese and what they did to Pearl Harbor, once you killed 3,000 Japanese soldiers, you've avenged the dead. But instead, no,
you're saying I'd be dead even.
We sacrificed 300,000 American lives to avenge the 3,000 that was dead, and
Pearl Harbor, FDR was a war criminal. Pearl Harbor was taught as a stand down. The admirals wanted to take their ships out. He absolutely refused it. I personally spoke with the radio man from Midway Island that day. They knew they were going to be hit that day. They just thought they were going to be hit at Midway as well. That's just a fact. And
most of the fleet out.
Yes, they did. They lined up all these ships and had all these low-level guys there to take that hit.
Yeah.
It was a stand-down. It's taught that way at the War College today. That is a fact.
Yeah.
I'm not making this stuff up. Oh. I talked to the radio man in Midway. They knew they were going to be hit that day. He told me that. I mean, unless he was lying, I don't believe he was. That's why all the major ships were out. That's why they let these other guys sit there and take the hit. That was the whole point of it. And FDR was a war criminal.
We're a waste of metal. The battleships were a waste of metal.
The end of World War II, we had depleted 95% of our oil reserves.
Yeah.
And that's why we got in bed with the Saudis.
Correct. And all the OPEC countries.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying,
it's worse than being a criminal. I mean, you throw the guy under the rock with Paul.
You know, Yahweh tells us all this stuff when he was talking to, I understand he was talking to Yehuda, but he was talking to Shamuel, and he says, here's what your government's going to do to you. Why should it surprise any of us that this is exactly what they do to us?
Confiscate your productivity, confiscate your children, develop weapons of war, and then deploy your children to manage their weapons of war, which they are going to constantly use.
Yes.
America 101 wars in the first 400 years of its existence since the first colonists invaded the New World.
You know what the biggest laugh of a commercial is out there today, you guys? It's the one with I'm not sure. I go back between the Army and the Navy, but I think the Army is the most laughable. They show all this assault equipment and guys doing parajumps and everything else. And then it says, we've been protecting your freedom for, you know, X amount of years. And I'm sitting there going, since when did anybody in the Army ever protect any of my freedoms? Ever.
Yeah, ever.
We've been promoting wars all over
the
world.
It's the biggest lie.
It is the biggest lie.
Yes.
You owe your freedom to the military.
Yeah, that's what it says. Yes. Thank you. I see you for seeing this commercial, too. And I'm sitting there shaking my head going, does anybody really believe this propaganda? And the answer is,
oh, yes, they all do. Oh, yeah, they do. They do.
Don't try and say anything against the military down here in Texas.
Yeah. See what happens.
Yeah.
I've almost got it in my mouth more than once.
Oh, yeah. And it is so obvious that the military is counterproductive, working detrimentally against the interests of the people. And that the military and the police agencies and the national federal agents collectively are all unifying. And we're creating a police state that's much more disastrous than the Nazis ever did with the Gestapo. And our spy network and our military and our police put Nazi Germany to shame.
They've got a propaganda machine that's second to none. I mean, it would make Hitler blush. Look, how many movies have you or I or anyone else ever seen where a bunch of guys are protecting the president, or aliens are invading the Earth, and who do they? Who's the go-to guy? Who's the genius that's going to solve this problem? A president. Can you imagine a political actor who's clawed and scraped and lied his way to the top? This is the genius you're going to go to stop the alien invasion. I mean, how laughable does
we're
that get?
We have all
of course.
I hear some truth.
Yeah. Yet people believe it. I'm sorry. Shut up.
Before people believe it.
Yeah,
it's interesting to consider the timeline of Yashia. We covered this in observations today, but I do want to go over this paragraph because it is really fascinating. Most sweeping presentation of prophetic history relative to Yisrael. What Daniel's is for the whole world. Yeshayah is a history of Israel from about 745 BCE through 33 CE. And it is interesting to note that from a context of time, that it was around 760 BCE that Yonah had been sent to Nineveh. And that's the birthplace of the beast. That was the heart of Babylon at the time. And it was in order to awaken Gentiles to the message that the Israelites had failed to proclaim. Then in 750 BCE, Hosea was asked to marry a temple whore, a religious whore, identifying that whores, from God's perspective, are religious, and to announce the divorce decree, telling the northern kingdom, known as Ephraim, that they had breached the covenant and were no longer his children. He's very clear as to what's going to happen going forward from that point and when the relationship would be reconciled, which he also speaks of on Yahweh's behalf in that same book. Now, shortly thereafter, the most complete and compelling presentation of God's people commenced with the opening salvo of Yashayah. And that began in 745 BCE. Now, that timing is rather interesting. You know how many years prior to 745 BCE that the Torah was shared with Moshe?
Well, it would have to be. Let me see.
1445 BCE is when the Torah was shared was given to Moshe. 745 BCE is when Yeah, she penned the opening words of that prophetic presentation.
He's the man.
That is 700 years.
Exactly. What a coincidence.
It is exactly 700 years from the handing down of the Torah to Yahweh telling Yisrael their fate. Now, something rather important happened in 33 CE, didn't it? Year 4000, yeah. How many years transpired, recognizing we go from 1 BCE to 1 AD, CE, and there's no year zero? How many years transpired between 725 BCE and 33 CE when Yosef fulfilled the promises made?
777 years.
That is correct. 700 years after the Torah, 777 years before Yahshiyah would fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah. It's also interesting that if you take the last date of this book, the last testimony of Yahshiyah was proclaimed in 702 BCE. That means exactly 700 years from the last word to the time that you saw the fulfillment for unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given.
That's amazing.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. I mean, it's just extraordinary that you could have two 700s and a 777 associated with the most important events in human history and how Yahshiyah is sandwiched in between. Yeah, it's extraordinarily compelling from my point of view. Now, for those that want to know kind of the history of Israel in this period of time, there's really no reason for me to redo that, because Kirk, you and I did that earlier today, so it'll be in that the observations archive. So let's just begin by giving a summation of Yahshiyah 1:1, 1:2, and 1:3, and then we'll dig down deep and this is the revealing communication of Yahshiyah. Salvation is from Yahweh, son of Amos, the trustworthy and steadfast. Wherefore, basically, or beneficially, he compiled and revealed a written prophetic record of the covenant relationship concerning Yahudah, meaning related to Yah, and Jerusalem, the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation and restoration flow. In the days of Uzziah, boldness and empowerment are from Yah. Yotham, Yah was perfect. Achaz, he has grasped hold. And Yachiz Yah, strengthened by Yahweh. Rulers of Yahuda, the beloved of Yahweh. Now, the reason that that opening salvo is important, you know, there's not a single bit of prophecy there. But, you know, for prophecy to be credible, it has to be anchored in time. It has to be anchored in time. And so what the opening salvo says, what I care about is Yahuda. What I care about is the heart of Yahuda, which is Jerusalem. What I am telling you is that Jerusalem and Yahuda is the place where I'm focused. And I'm telling you that the timing here, so that you know who was the first king and who was the last king while Yahshiyahu was proclaiming Yahweh's prophetic message, you can establish the time. You can date it because it's grounded in history. And since prophecy is all about this eye gulp in time, of connecting things in time, you're able to deduce 700 years from the Torah. 777 years to the fulfillment of the promises that are made. Because it's all grounded in time.
Well, that tells me he's left enough meat on the bone, so if you really want to be observant and you want to dig it out, then you obviously get rewarded. Look what you did with the numbers. I mean, that's staggering.
We
like to have fun with
this,
but he did.
Right. That is the fun of being observant. No matter how much time.
The next line is very important because it tells us a lot. That
this next line is powerful. Listen, spiritual realm. Now you might think, wait a minute, why is Yahweh telling the spiritual realm to listen? We'll think about that in a moment. and choose of your own accord to pay attention and respond, material realm, because Yahweh has spoken. I reared my children, lifting them up, helping them grow, enabling them to be great, and I raised them, taking them to a higher place. But they actually rebelled against me. Now, what I prefer we do is, let me read this 1-3, then we'll dig into 1-1, and we'll come back to 1-2, because 1-2 is, there's so much meat on that bone. And then Yahweh says, a cow, one who looks, sees what's around him, and views the world from the proper perspective, is aware of and recognizes his creator, the one who gave him birth. And an ass, a stubborn, domestic beast of burden, his Lord. Yisrael, individuals who struggle and fight with God, does not know and remains unaware. My people have failed to consider this connection, and therefore they do not understand. You could take those last two statements and spend a week on them. But let's go back to 1-1 and go through this in our normal way. The revealing communication, chazon. Chazon is a spectacular word, Kirk, because you might think that chazon just means prophetic revelation, but that's really a very small part of what it means.
Yes.
Chazon is a prophetic record of the relationship agreement, of the covenant contract that enables people to be perceptive. So it's about observation, about being perceptive, about not only closely examining, but carefully considering. In other words, chazon is the derivative of shamar. Shamar is to closely examine and carefully consider. Chazon is the revealing communication about those observations and thoughts that is derived from them.
Yeah, I've got an understanding on a high level to perceive what is normally in that scene in the vision of light, looking through, say, through a wall was an example given, so you see what's normally in that scene. So,
right.
Yeah.
A very powerful term. Right, yeah. And just to render it prophecy is to do it a tremendous injustice. This is, and you can tell, Yashiyah is a smart dude. His vocabulary is way beyond anyone else's. When I'm translating Yashiyah, it takes me twice the amount of time as it takes me to translate anything else. Like I've spent the last 2 weeks doing Chronicles and Shamuel. And, I mean, I can translate it in a hurry. But when you get into Yashiyah, every word is, his vocabulary is so much better developed than anyone else's. It becomes an intellectual engagement. And that's what we find here. This is morsels of words to be nourished by. Now, it's also one of the great tragedies, I think, of all time is removing Yashayahu's name and replacing it with Isaiah. Because Yashayahu is the same name as Yahusha, but written with the verb after the name as opposed to the verb before the name. Yasha is to save. Yahu is the truncated, the contracted familial version of Yahweh. So Yashayahu is salvation is from Yahweh, where Yahusha is Yahweh saves. And to toss that away just because you don't like Hebrew, it's just a great crime. Now he was, Yashayahu was the son of Amos. And Amos in Hebrew means trustworthy and steadfast. So the reason that Yashayahu is a child of the covenant is because he understands that his father, Heavenly Father, represents Amos, trustworthy and steadfast. Amos is from Amon, which is the verb that upon which Amen, Amon, is based. It means trustworthy, confirming, upholding, supportive, nourishing, and establishing. And Amos, to be strong, courageous, secure, and steadfast, established and bold.
Right.
Whereby, now, this is Asher. I have translated Asher, which, that, wherefore, some of the typical ways. But I've always added something to Asher because I looked at the lexicons, and I studied the lexicons, and what they say is that, first of all, Asher is a relational term. It talks about a relationship between two people or two things or two places. And so it's a relational term. And then that Yasher as a verb, which typically defines the nature of a word, as a verb, it means to bless, to bring good fortune, to bring mercy, to do something beneficial as a verb. So this is as a benefit of the relationship. So I was rendering what really appeared at first blush to be a challenging statement that Yama was making on behalf of Dode. And I just got this sense that, you know, you haven't checked up on Asher in a long time. And so you're getting lazy. This would be a really good time for you to look up Asher. And what I found is that Asher, the word written with the same letters, Aleph, Shen, Rosh, also means to provide perspective. It means to show the proper path in life. And so when Yahweh uses Asher, as he very often does, regarding his plans and his means of salvation, he's talking about a path that you walk that leads to a beneficial relationship and of this particular focus providing the proper perspective from which to view the issues of life. So it is a really powerful word, and it is the single most important word in my life, Asher. And the reason it's the single most important word in my life is I was halfway between an agnostic and a Christian when I first started writing these books. And Asher was the word that came up when I was trying to deal with 25 prophecies regarding Yosha.
Yeah.
To say that, you know, there's no way that they could have been fulfilled by chance. And I found that just running those 25 on the odds, it was 10 to the 56th power, was the likelihood of them all occurring.
Yeah, that's likely.
Yeah, that's likely.
That was one of my favorite chapters in Tea with Terrorists.
Yeah, one of my very favorites. But one of the things that was interesting about it, though, is as I was sitting here trying to deal with the prophecy, and it's in Shamuel. And it's the second book of Shamuel in the seventh chapter. And it says in every English Bible, and I must have checked 10 or 15 of them, and every English Bible it says, when he sins, I will not spare the rod. And I was dumbfounded. And I'd been an evangelist in Christianity. I mean, the whole thing was he was the perfect person, and because he was the perfect individual, he could take on our guilt and not suffer for his own.
Yeah, I remember you saying when he was associated with sin. Not that he was outside the Torah, but that he was associated with being outside the Torah.
And when I look up the word in Strong's, I find out the first thing it is, it's a relationship term that establishes a relationship with things. So it really says when sin is associated with him. But now that I know, there's so much more to Asher. It's that sin was beneficially associated with him. To show the way.
For our benefit.
To provide perspective.
Well, you know something, and that's something I've actually been thinking about this week. I mean, for strangest reasons. I've often, and I've even asked on this show, can anybody give me a reason why he had to fulfill the Moed in such a brutal fashion? I mean, it was brutal. And 2 days of it was brutal. And that's enough. The more I got to think about it, you just hit on it. This is what I was thinking this week. It was to draw attention to the path.
Of course.
You know,
right.
When we look at Yahweh's name, and I'm not getting off the subject here, You know what? What's the big thing we all see in that pictorial, Kirk? It's that hand reaching from the other dimension, isn't it?
Yes.
Right.
But you know what we often overlook? When we're out there holding up our two loaves, okay, that are full of leaven, where we're being enriched and empowered, our hands are in the air.
Sure.
And we're responding. And all Yah was ever asking any of us to do is to respond in an appropriate manner. Which means with a lack of religion, by the way. And that's my biggest thing, I think. I think that's Yahweh's biggest thing.
I think there's a number of reasons that Passover was that brutal.
Okay.
I'm going to share thoughts with you because I think it's important. The Passover lamb, that Passover lamb was killed as quickly and as mercifully as absolutely possible. It was, the neck was slit. So the lamb went from alive to dead in a second and didn't suffer. Now, if Yahusha had been served as the Passover lamb that way, and you have just a slice of the throat, there's no public display.
That's right.
No public display. There's no public display. There's no outright
proof.
Affirmation. Yeah.
Proof.
Proof. Yahweh acts in public. And so the reason crucifixion was used is because it put the victim up high on a pole such that that victim and was made naked so that and always put along a roadway for the express purpose of drawing attention. One of the reasons to draw attention. Now the second is the places that the receptacle for the upright poles were placed were few and far between. But if you're dealing with somebody that's going to just slice the throat, it's very difficult for Yahweh to intervene in so much free will to have the throat slit at exactly the right spot. But positioning the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat directly below that the receptacle beneath the upright pole.
The upright pole.
So that when Yahusha's blood dripped down through the crack in the soil, it dripped right on the mercy seat.
Yeah.
That's something that does not happen if he was just chased down and his throat was slit.
That's probably why I believe mostly that the thing is there. That's where the mercy seat is.
Right. And also, he is now identified with Golgotha, which means to roll away. You know, Golgotha is the Hebrew word for skull, but it's based on the verb, means to roll away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right there on the directly below the summit of Zion Moriah. Positioning is absolutely perfect. Moreover, that particular place is 777 paces above sea level and 700 paces from the most set apart portion of the temple where the Ark of the Covenant was stored. Exactly the sevens and the 777 all over again. Now, all of those things are important, but there's another thing. There's only one country in the history of humankind known for crucifixion.
Yeah.
Now, the Assyrians did it occasionally with ropes, but it's the Romans. And so,
you mentioned crucifixion, it's the Romans that people think of.
Of course. I mean, because 99% of crucifixion in human history was perpetrated by the Romans.
Especially
and
the way
so,
we view crucifixion today.
Right.
Actually
crucifixion is a Roman thing. So, who is it that lashed out and killed the Passover lamb?
The Romans.
Romans. And
along with the religious people.
If you're responsible for killing the diminished manifestation of Yahweh, not his soul, not his spirit, but the body, that would make you adversarial to Yahweh, wouldn't it?
Absolutely would.
Yeah, just
so it entrenches the adversarial nature of Rome and the Roman Catholic Church.
And Paul. Yeah, sure it does.
Yeah,
absolutely it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. He was proud of being a Roman citizen. Very proud of it. Took a Roman name.
Yep. And I think that the next point on Passover, I think it's important, is that it demonstrates this level of suffering, the level of sacrifice Yahweh was willing to endure for us to be his children.
In order to draw that attention.
Yeah,
in order to draw
it. We're going to slit the throat, and everything else is going to be peachy keen. And, you know, big deal. So, you know, his spirit was gone. The soul would soon depart. It was a moment of gurgling and gasping, and we're done. It's not the level of sacrifice that Yahweh wanted to make. And while that sacrifice was gruesome and excruciating, the fact is that it was insignificant to the to matzah. Now, matzah since it's unseen, matzah didn't occur. He'd go to Sheol. The soul didn't go to Sheol to be seen. Matzah was required because it is the penalty for our rebellion. And so the only way that God can be just and fair and honest is for someone to ransom, to pay the price, to resolve the penalty that is due us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why matzah had to occur in Sheol. And, you know, don't think for a moment that it occurred over a 24-hour period of time. It didn't. Not from his perspective.
That's relativity right there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, from his perspective, it would have seemed like forever.
Infinite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no time there. So, yeah.
Correct.
A minute's a day or a year.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get
you
that.
Know, well,
that
there's other horrible things that are possible, too. Let's say if his throat had been slit. Typical Passover lamb. How is he going to utter, my God, why have you forsaken me? If he doesn't utter that, how do we know that it ties to the 22nd Psalm? How do we know that God didn't die?
That's a very good point. I mean, and of course, when I first read that, I've got a note called Eye Opener that explains it. But, you know, when I first read that, I went, wow, that, you know, I mean, this was a good insight you had there, you know, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, because Yahweh's soul cannot, no aspect of his spirit, excuse me,
right,
can be in Sheol, because
right,
then, yeah, it's keeping
the spirit die.
And then
so
when
God
we go back.
Die. So God separated himself from the soul and the body before death.
Yeah, and when we look at Yahshayah, where he says not to focus on his physical manifestation, but on his overall spiritual endeavors, who is it with him? If she, well, we know who she is. That's the Ruach.
Right.
Now, go tell a rabbinic Jew that, and they'll go through the roof, by the way. I have no idea when it says
she. They're not wise enough in Hebrew to know that Ruach is a feminine noun?
Yeah, apparently not. No, they're not. I don't understand it. How dare you insult my Ruach? I said, it's not your Ruach. Believe me, I had it. I said, it's Yahweh's Ruach. It's not yours. You have nothing to do with that Ruach. Like, you don't even know that. A Yahweh.
Right. Yeah.
How dare you? You know, I said, just shut up and go be religious and pretend you know something about the Torah that you don't. You know.
So returning to 1:1, we have revealing communication, which is the thoughtful written prophetic record of the relationship agreement and the covenant contract, enabling the ability to be perceptive of Yahshayahu. Salvation is from Yahweh. What a powerful name. Son of Amos. Son of the trustworthy and steadfast. Whereby he compiled and revealed a written prophetic record of the covenant relationship, Chazon again, concerning the Vatican, Washington, New York, London, Mecca. Don't think so. Concerning Yahudah, related to Yah, beloved of Yah. Jerusalem, source from which teaching, instruction, guidance, and direction regarding reconciliation and restoration flows.
Like the same Yara that's in Torah, you mean, base
right.
word?
Right. Right. That's where he's coming from. That's where he's speaking from. And that's where God is inspiring him. In the days of, this is all for context, Uz Yahu, boldness and empowerment are from Yah, that's O's to strengthen and embolden, to prevail by being steadfast, also named known as Uzziah, but it's Uz Yahu. He reigned, by the way, from 791 to 740 BCE. Yotham. Yotham is Yahweh's perfect, complete, and upright. Yotham reigned from 750 to 732 BCE. And you might say, wait a minute, you numbskull. You got 791 to 740, and then you got 750 to 732. Yeah, there was a period of time where they were co-regents. 10 years. Where they were co-regents.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have... pardon?
One was sick. One of the first one.
Yeah.
Uzi was sick, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you have Yakis Yah, which is Hezekiah. I am strengthened by Yahweh. And he reigned from 725 to 697 BCE. And he calls them, they're all kings of Yehuda. And because the timeline is so well established in the Torah, God grounds all of his prophetic testimony in historic time. We know exactly when Yeshua began to write his book. Now,
astounding work, by the way. Really. That's astounding work. Good. I would have blown by that over and over. It's amazing.
You know, it's the reason I didn't blow by it is really twofold. When I stumbled upon 666 from Hezekiah, from Chabaouk, to Paul's first letter, and you see that, then you realize, you know, I think I better check all of these things because there's just too many interesting affirmations, and so. This was just it's just one of those things where you have to check. It's just because
no, I know you were looking for
checking
it. I know that.
It.
Still
yeah,
good research. Good
yeah.
job.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well. Wow.
Yeah. Now, prophecy is Yahweh's signature. It's his mark, serving to prove that he authored the testimony in which the predictions are presented. That's the reason, for example, that I reject the Book of Ecclesiastes. That's why I reject the Psalm of Solomon. If the book does not contain important and profound prophetic statements, it's not from Yahweh. It's got to be correct historically. It's got to be correct prophetically. It has to be consistent with what God has said about life. And I want to tell you that vanity of vanities, you know, everything is vanity. No, it isn't. It isn't. And so, prophecy is important because it is Yahweh's signature. It's his mark. It proves that he authored a testimony in which the predictions are presented. So since we have a 2,200-year-old intact scroll of Yahshua before the rabbinic type started messing around with it, and we have prophecy in it, and the prophecy in it predates its fulfillment either by 700 years or by as much as 2,700 years, we can be absolutely certain that God exists and that he authored this. Therefore, we ought to pay attention.
It might matter to listen. Yeah, that's... you know what? Again... How many people have ever actually listened to Yahweh? Don't you even understand his nature? Don't most people, aren't they going to go bow down? Aren't they going to go,
I'm going to tell you, there's only one way to listen to Yahweh.
In his words.
His words. Yeah.
He calls them his words. Yeah.
Right. You recite his testimony, and you're listening to him. Now, let me give you just a little bit of a synopsis of history here. Yehuda initially flourished under... Uzziah. They triumphed over the Philistines and the Arabians. But once he became presumptuous in the temple, circa 750 BCE, you know, you get proud and full of yourself. God has no more use for you. He was stricken with leprosy. Jotham, more commonly known as Jotham, became co-regent at the time Assyria's Tiglath-Pileser rose to power and was threatening Israel. Yehudah, however, prospered because Jotham walked with Yahweh. Unfortunately, many did not. And in rebellion, they increasingly became religious, building shrines for idol worship. Yehudah, as Yeshayahu professes, was in full retreat from Yahweh by 736 BCE, when Ahaz claimed the throne. Now, he was a resolutely evil monarch. He was willing to sacrifice his own son as a burnt offering to the Canaanite god Molech. Okay, so, you know, this notion that Paul writes that, you know, all governments are of God and God appoints all these kings. Well,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, Ahaz sacrificed his own son as a burnt offering to the Canaanite god Molech. He was a pagan, establishing religious centers and high places for the worship of false gods. In one such case, after seeing a foreign idol, he ordered Uriah, the priest, to construct a replica of the idol, placing the little fellow in a prominent place within Yahweh's temple. Now, what do you think Yahweh's going to do? If you're going to pollute his temple with idols, is he's going to say, yeah, sure, but piece of shit down.
My guess is that you're in deep kimchi at that point.
Yeah,
and
at that point, God's
not going to get better.
I don't want religion in my house, and if you're going to put that religious false god in my house, we're going to tear it down, and we're going to start over. Now, as a result, the Syrians conquered the outlying areas of Yehudah, hauling many away into slavery. Also at this time, the northern kingdom of Ephraim began to fight with Yehudah. Taking advantage of this split, Rezin, the king of Aram, Syria, attacked Jerusalem, severely damaging the city. His siege would have prevailed had Ahaz not solicited the help of the Assyrians. Now, this brings us to one of the most amazing periods in history, one of my very favorites. Yachizyah, Hezekiah, became king in 725 BCE, 20 years after Yahweh first spoke to and through Yeshayahu. Early in his reign, Hezekiah was given a copy of the Torah. Someone had found it in a corner of the Torah, of the temple. And after reading it, he cleaned God's home and his land of all religious imagery. Every idol was destroyed. And then he, along with all of Jerusalem and a small cadre of others throughout Yehudah, celebrated Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkot. The northern kingdom was invited, but they declined. Thereafter, Hezekiah refused to pay tribute to Assyria for their protection because he had a far more reliable and powerful ally. Then, during the fourth year of his reign, Salmaneser, the new king of Assyria, came against Samaria, conquering it after a three-year siege, but not Jerusalem. Then, 7 years thereafter, in the 14th year of Hezekiah's rule, Assyria seized every remaining city in Yehudah except one, Jerusalem. Every one of the 185,000-man army, comprised of Assyria's best warriors, who had come to teach Jerusalem a lesson, learned the hard way that no one can be successful in a fight against God.
Yeah, that was a malach of death in one night. And by the way, that's a historical fact. Everybody knows
that. Of course,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, confirmed.
Yes, even confirmed on an Assyrian seal. And, you know, there were so many intellectuals that mocked the story of found in the Torah and prophets, saying that, you know, the Hittites didn't exist, and, you know, that there's no, you know, record of 185,000 Assyrians all dying one night outside of the gates of Yehudah. And come to find out, there's affirmations of these things written for our review that are prevalent around the world. You can read, the king says, you know, I had conquered all of these places, and I had Jerusalem surrounded like a bird in a cage. And then he says nothing because his army was obliterated. Now, this says, listen, spiritual realm. Now, why do you think God would tell the spiritual realm to listen? Those are the Malach.
Because they're part of a command and a control structure. Listen, they don't have free will.
You know, when Ron Wyatt had a chance to talk with the Malach that was guarding the Ark of the Covenant, and the Malach said, you know, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to stay here until the tablets, Yaz asked me to hold up the tablets once the Torahless one begins to promote the Sunday law. Now, do you think that he knew that because Yahweh told him? Or do you think he just said, yeah, that sounds like a fun idea?
No, Yahweh told him.
Yahweh told him. So God wants to inform his Malach. That's why they need to listen. They know who God is, but it's important that they do what God wants done. So listen, spiritual realm, and choose of your own accord to pay attention and respond, material realm. That's us. We are in
that would be called free will. That's free will.
Free will.
Yeah.
It was written in the imperative, expressing second person volition. And it's active. God wants us to pay attention. He wants us to respond to him. But it's our choice. Because Yahweh has spoken. And you'd think that, okay, if God's going to speak, maybe I'm going to pay attention. But so few people do. And this is what he said, and I've got to tell you, these are some of the saddest, gut-wrenching words in the whole of the Torah and Navi. I reared my children, lifting them up, helping them grow, enabling them to be great, gadol benem. And I raised them, taking them to a higher place, room. But they have actually rebelled against me. Pasha ba ani. You know, can you imagine being a father, raising your children, nurturing them, lifting them up, enabling them, guiding them, embracing them, doing everything you can on behalf of your children, making, you know, huge sacrifices on their behalf, and them choosing, you know, what I want to do is I want to run away and pretend that somebody who isn't my parent is my parent. And I want to give thanks to someone else and reject you. Man, it's just revolting. But what it does is the opening chapter tells us that Yahweh's view of the ideal relationship is he's father, and Yisrael represents his children. Father and son, father and daughter, relationship. And God's in the business of lifting us up, not us bowing down to him, of helping us grow, of enabling us to be great, to take us to a higher place. That's what he wants to do for us. And what we have done in response is to rebel against him. To say, no, I don't want to grow.
That passage, 1-2, It does away with the idea of commands. It just does away with
it. Does.
I mean, it's just flat out. If somebody is still in a mindset of obey and command, they need to seriously think about those words. I mean, he wants us to think. That's
well,
what the symbol is.
It's not only the volitional mood, choose of your own accord. It's the whole context. This is context is father-son, father-children. It's because it's father, children, you can't have a command. You know, the relationship being established here is family.
Yeah, it's got to be done with love. Respect.
Right. That is correct.
Sure.
So it does completely do away with it, but it tells us that God's idea is to lift us up so that we can grow. Rather than us getting down to lift him up in praise, which does no good, it's just insulting, he gets down to lift us up, to enable us. To take us to a higher place.
Yeah, it's there again, isn't it? It's there again. Raise you up. Yeah, it's there.
No, but
yeah.
They pasha. They rebelled against me. They have revolted against me. They are openly defiant. They have stepped away. They have transgressed our agreement. In so doing, they have offended me, making me angry, even indignant, because they have conspired to act in an organized fashion in direct opposition to my authority. Kirk, you were mentioning earlier today that when you talk to a Christian and you explain the how Christmas and Easter are derived directly from the Babylonian religion. They have absolutely no correlation whatsoever to Yahweh's testimony, and they are wholly Babylonian, and the person will always come back and say, well, that's not what it means to me.
Well, pretty much.
Well, what God is saying here to these people is, I'll tell you what it means to me when you do those things. It makes me angry. It offends me that you do those things. So you might think that you're not doing anybody that's getting harmed to celebrate Christmas and Easter, and I'm here to tell you, you are offending God. You're making him angry. You're stepping away from him. You're being openly defiant of him, making a mockery of everything that he's offering.
Well, you know, when you start thinking about what he's offering, Gadol and Rome and all that about raising you high, and what we know now because of what century we happen to be in, and we're thinking dimensionally like the seventh dimension, and my gosh, it's not like I'm just going to make you king or make you really special people and not make the Arabians special people. He's talking so far beyond anything we can comprehend.
Correct.
And that makes it even worse. I mean, to reject, you don't get what I'm giving you.
There's no international number. Is there an international number to listen to the show? Or yes, no? I don't think there is. Is there?
There is a call-in number, which is which you can dial from anywhere in the world. It's 347-326-9553. And a lot of people do listen to the show on the telephone. 347-326-9553. But you can also listen to the live feed of the show via Blog Talk Radio. You go to Yada Yada Radio on Blog Talk Radio, and you can hear a live play of the show. Now, this next line, before we go to that show, I want to reemphasize something. I've said it 1,000 times. I'm going to say it one more time. I'm going to say it probably 1,000 more times. But Yahweh begins his most important prophetic declaration by establishing the relationship from his perspective with humankind as father and child. Of him doing the work of a parent. Of him serving us. Not of us serving him. Of him serving us. Not of us worshiping him or bowing down to him. Of him diminishing himself to lift us up. It is Yahweh saying, I raised you as my children, so I could lift you up, I could help you grow, I could nurture you. And when you realize that God is coming at from the perspective of father to child, now you understand that the only thing that's important to him is the covenant.
If that were not so, we would say so. I mean, he wouldn't have left that out.
Well, he would have said, like Muhammad did, Allah has a lot of slaves.
He would have said, I'm the supreme authority of the universe. You did not bow down to me. You did not worship me. You were not religious in your praise of me, and therefore I'm going to smite you and knock you down. No, he came at it and says, I was your father. I looked at you as my children. I nursed you. I raised you. I protected you. I lifted you up. That places provides a perspective on Yahweh that is the only proper way to view him, as a father diminishing himself, making sacrifices to lift us up, to serve us, providing for our best interests. And that is the antithesis of a religious God. So,
great point.
Yeah,
it's easy to blow by that, but that's a very good point. When you know, a lot of
that's
times you get
that is
to
perspective. If you don't have perspective, you can never understand.
Right, and a lot of times people can get into the father and son relationship, and they got this father that's this guy that's beating them with a belt or something, you know, as opposed to somebody trying to lift them up, you know, and see them be successful, which is obviously the perspective that Yah was,
right,
advancing here.
So. Now, this is this comparison. I mean, this is right now at the beginning. Is Yah's introduction, 700 years after he revealed the Torah, 700 years before Yahusha from the end of the this revelation, from the time that Yahusha is going to fulfill the prophecies made in it, and 770 years from the beginning to the time that Yahusha fulfills Pesach, Matzah, and
777 years.
Right, 777 to from the beginning of this to that date, and he is now saying in his next statement to Israel, a cow is aware and recognizes the one who gave birth to him, and an ass is Lord. Israel does not know and remains oblivious. Now, cow was chosen not because of what a cow is, but what the word for cow represents. It's Shur. It's a bull or oxen. It's from Shur. One who looks, sees what's around him, and views the world from the proper perspective. One who pays attention and is perceptive. He's saying, goddamn cow.
A beast of burden.
A cow, because they look around and they're perceptive, and they pay attention, is aware of its mother. And then he says, even an ass, a chamor, a donkey, a stubborn domestic beast of burden. It's from Chamotes, which is a class of lowly and impoverished people who are oppressed. It's akin to Chametz, which is the leaven, the embittered. It says, even an ass recognizes his Lord.
Yeah, he just called those with a Lord an ass, by the way.
Yes, he did. Absolutely. He's saying, if you think that the Lord is God, you're an ass.
You're a dumbass.
Yeah, you are a dumbass if you think that the Lord is God. You are a dumbass. And if you don't recognize who created you, then you're inferior to the cow.
Wow.
And then he says of Yisrael, arguably the smartest race on the planet. No one can compare per capita in terms of contributions to human enlightenment. And he said, Yisrael, when it comes to what's really important, you do not know. You're oblivious. You are lo yada, the negation of yada. You have no respect. You're unfamiliar. You fail to acknowledge.
No.
You're unafraid. You lack appreciation. Yisrael does not know. You know, I have been accused at times of being an anti-Semite. Because I hold Yisrael account, yeah. Because, you know, for example, in Prophet of Doom, I wrote that Islam would not exist had rabbis not sold Muhammad readings from their Talmud.
Well, true. Talmud.
Right.
Yahweh said that. He tells them that they invented it.
Right. Yeah. You're right. And the Quran repeats it over and over again that the Jews sold readings from their Talmud. And then when Muhammad twisted them to suit his agenda, the same rabbis mocked him. And then he ultimately killed them because they had the goods on him. They knew that they had sold him this stuff and that he wasn't getting revelations from God. He was plagiarizing what they were sharing with him. But had they not done that, the Quran would have had nothing in it that would have given it any credibility. 100% of the credibility found in the Quran, and it isn't very much, but is based upon the bastardization of the Talmud readings.
But how does that make
it's just like calling Christianity. The only credibility it has is the bastardized caricatures of the individuals. Yeah, in the Torah and Mizmor, the Psalms. So, God is saying that when you are willfully ignorant in this way, bad things happen. That's why they rejected God, as they didn't have a clue who He was. Not a clue. But as I said, I'm called an anti-Semite because I hold people accountable. And the reason I brought that up here is that, you know, if
you're anti-Judaism, you're not anti-Semitic.
Right.
That is so stupid.
Correct. Yeah, Yahweh is anti the religion being practiced by the Jews and anti the politics being practiced by the Jews. Mm-hmm. And so he is overtly critical of what they had become, what they were doing. And so if you or I also express this concern about their religion and their politics, you aren't being anti-Semitic. What you're doing is conveying Yahweh's message.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Truth is not racist. Truth is not bigoted. Truth is enlightening.
Truth is truth.
If God says, I'm opposed to you for these reasons, it's important we know those reasons.
Okay.
So here we are. It says that Yisrael does not know. Then he says, my people have failed to consider the connection, and thus they do not understand. Bien is one of my very favorite words. We've talked about this before, but bien is a word that specifically describes making connections. That's how we come to understand. And he says, they're unable to make the connection. If you can't make the connection, you can't understand. But we began this review of Yahshayah by making a connection to the time that it was being revealed. It's important to know how to connect things to create understanding, to see the relationship between them.
Yeah.
He says, my people have failed to consider this connection, and thus they do not understand. So if you were, you know, by the way, what connection? The connection is Yahweh Father lifting up, nurturing, enriching, empowering his children, and yet his children rebelling against him by pasha, religious means.
Well, there's only one group that did that, that were considered his children at that time, and that would be Yehuda, period.
And
there's nobody else.
It's important to know here, and we talked about this briefly, Kirk, in the earlier show, is that when God is condemning Yisrael for its religion, that the religion he is condemning is not Judaism.
No, of course not.
This was written beginning in 745 BCE. Judaism as a religion really didn't come into its own until around 200 BCE. It was when the Essenes, the Sadducees, and the Pharisees created three sects of Judaism to combat the political and religious occupation of the Greeks. So that is when Judaism became manifest. And today there's only one form of Judaism, which is the rabbinic. It's the only one that has survived, which is parasitic. So the condemnation of religion that is being exposed here has nothing to do with Judaism.
So it's still Babylonian.
It is Babylonian. And so what is more Babylonian, rabbinic Judaism, Christianity, or Islam?
I would say Christianity.
Overwhelmingly.
Yeah,
yeah, almost everything that is the core of Christianity comes from Babylon, and we could list off 100 things. You know, there's very little difference in the Christian religion with its Trinity, with its crosses, with its steeples, with its Sunday worship, with its Christmas, with its Easter, with its Lent, with its holy, with its paid clergy. All that
New Testament, God.
Yeah, New Testament. Yeah, a dying and resurrecting God. The Son of the Son, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God. It's all Babylonian. And so that's the religion that Yahweh is condemning here. And so it really is Christianity.
It's interesting, too, because it kind of tells me that the tribes of Yisrael ended up going out and establishing Christian nations. I mean, that's what happened. That's what they did.
They did.
That's what they did.
They became the Celtics. They moved to Europe. They grew
so it's that connection that God has said, the reason that you have not benefited from all that I'm trying to do for you as a father is because you didn't make the connections. You don't understand. Now, if you were to play that the opposite way, if you are estranged from God and you did not receive the intended benefits from God because you did not understand, what do you think the right way to avail yourself of those benefits might be?
So to read this stuff.
To understand. Yeah, to make connections.
So you can understand.
Yeah, to know and understand is the way to God. It's the reason why I'm more indebted to God than anyone who's ever lived. Dode's life and his lyrics affirm that the only way, that the only thing that matters with God is being right. Dode was definitely not good, but he was right. And there is no one that Yahweh loves more than Dode. And what Dode realized by studying Yahweh's Torah was that if you come to understand, no one understands who God is and what he's offering, and you act upon that in a reasonable way, that you're guaranteed inclusion into his family. Dode came at it from a point of view of observation, perception, understanding, and response. And to have him explain how we are to observe the Torah and to realize that doing stupid stuff is irrelevant so long as you are right on what God is offering and accepting it correctly, then that's all that matters. You're totally liberated, totally free. And Dode was a bad boy, and yet his insights into Yahweh's nature are the most illuminating in the universe. So what this is doing is Yahshayah is affirming what Dode has told us. It's about knowing, it's about understanding, it's about responding intelligently to what God is offering. Let's kind of review. We're still recording, but not broadcasting. Let's just read through Yahshayah 4 through 9, and we'll pick it up there next week.
Okay.
Woe to an errant and blameworthy nation of Gentiles. Now, he's speaking to Yehuda, right? And he's calling them an errant and blameworthy nation of Gentiles. That means that they had so accepted the Gentile religion, the Gentile government schemes, which means Egyptian, Assyrian, Babylonian, that they were indistinguishable from those that they were emulating. Severely stubborn and heavily laden, dumbed, dulled, and unresponsive with corruption and guilt associated with perverted distortions, the offspring of errant, harmful, and evil children who corrupt and destroy, lacking integrity. They have rejected and abandoned Yahweh. They have come to despise and actually revile, genuinely feeling contempt for the set-apart one of Israel. They have become strangers, alienating themselves, having gone backwards in the wrong direction. Boy, I tell you what, you know, if you're religious and you're hearing God besmirch people for this, got to make you think. For what reason, on whose account, do you want to be continually afflicted and destroyed over and over again, associating with and adding to your obstinate and hostile rebellion? The entire head is impaired with disease, the entire heart, and thus the ability to exercise good judgment is cramped and infirmed. From the sole of the foot all the way to the top of the head, there's nothing that is healthy or sound. Emasculated, castrated, slashed, battered, and bruised with wounds associated with a devastating and deadly plague, which are raw and rotten. They have not been cleansed, nor medicated, nor bandaged, not even soothed with olive oil. Your land has become lifeless. Cities and towns will be consumed by fire. Your soil before you and conspicuously in your present will be devoured and destroyed by illegitimate, unauthorized, and foreign foes. The most nauseating of horrors. They will bring devastating perversity and adversarial transformation, similar to being overthrown by estranged adversaries. But the daughter of Zion, the conspicuous signs posted to mark the way, they will be preserved. They're going to be left as a reminder. They will be like a sheltered place for living in a vineyard, like an overnight cottage for a watchman, and a challenging, ill-treated garden filled with vehemently difficult stubble and chaff, like an awakened encampment preserved by the observant. Unless Yahweh of the spiritual messengers had not spared and preserved a remnant on our behalf as a few survivors. Then, like Sodom, scorched and burning, we would have been. And approaching Gomorrah, a tyrannically manipulated, depressed habitation, we would be likened and compared. Besides that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like to play?
Say some pretty powerful words right there.
Well, you notice that he's got the plague of death in there again. You know, he always equates everything as a path, which comforts me because when he ever says there's the wrong path and there's a right path, and the right path is always for Mickery. So I don't sweat the small stuff. I do a lot of crummy stuff. But
right.
I know he's not going out of the San Nicolas. Yeah, that's the path, and I ain't going to miss that.
That's right. Right.
So,
and, you know, even after he says this is all the stuff that's going to happen to you, that has happened to you, that will continue to happen to you, and you know, you turn down being elevated, being esteemed, being empowered, being nurtured, being raised up. You turned all that down, and this is what you brought on yourself. This is the consequence of your revolt, of you genuinely hating me. But Yahweh is always the same in this regard. He'll lay it out for you and say, this is what who I am, this is what I'm offering, this is who you are, this is how you're offending me. But for those who are open to knowing me, I have a Zion. There's a Zion. There is a conspicuous sign that is posted along the way that's been left as a reminder. There is a sheltered place for living in that vineyard. There's an overnight cottage for a watchman in that ill-treated garden with vehemently difficult stubble. There's an awakened encampment preserved by the observant. I'm still knowable, even though those I ask to be my witnesses have rebelled against me. I've left copious and everlasting signs along the way. And where are those signs? Where is Zion?
Well,
you know, Zion's not called a mountain.
It's also the signs of the Torah and everything that we get to read.
Yeah.
That say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
From
but you know, Zion is not called a mountain. It's always just Zion.
Zion, yeah.
It's always Zion. You know why it's called Zion? Because these signposts that are positioned along the way, they run from Doe's house to Yahweh's house. They run along the ridgeline of Moriah. It's the entire ridgeline of Moriah that points the way home. So that it begins with an understanding of who David was. You understand Doe's life and lyrics and Yahweh's everlasting loving relationship with him. That's where Zion begins, with the father reaching down and saying, I love this guy. This is a guy after my own heart. This is a man.
Can you imagine, I want you to picture this. Imagine being Noah or Abraham or Dode, okay? And you're actually accepting, you're open-minded enough, and you have to be extremely open-minded, because you don't have the information we have today.
No, correct. No.
And you're accepting that there's a creator from another dimension talking to you. I mean, think about this. I mean, this is huge. It's really, you have got to, and you deal with him rationally. Now, I'm not saying, you know, but you're dealing with the creator of the universe rationally, and then, I mean, whether you're Dode or whether you're Abraham or whether you're Noah, you realize everyone else around you is irrational.
Right. But I'm going to say, Larry, for a moment.
Yeah.
We know that Yahweh spoke directly with Adam in the perfect environment.
Absolutely.
Of the garden. We know that he gave personal instructions to Noah, which Noah listened to and acted upon. We know that he spoke directly to Moshe about the contents in the Torah, introducing himself and the contents in the Torah. We know that he spoke directly to Shemuel. Actually met with him one time in person. but he spoke directly to him. We know that he spoke these words to Yashiah, that Yashiah would write it down, speaking, you know, Yahweh's conversation in first person. We know that he inspired Dode. What is the difference between the way that he talked to them and the way that he talks to us when we read his words?
There is
no, I mean, there's not a visible manifestation for one thing.
Yeah.
And
the other is.
And for
another, the other is.
Okay, they're his words.
Yeah.
The words. Okay.
That's right.
Now, I get what you're getting at, but I still see. Well, you know, as far as
you were given the choice. Presented you were given
proof,
the choice.
There is no difference.
Okay.
There is no
you were given the choice. You can be Noah, and you can hear God's own voice booming in your ears.
Yes.
Or you can be you. And you can sit down, read God's testimony, make connections, ponder it, read it again, go over it and over it again so that you own the material and so that you've covered it enough times that you say, now I understand all of this. Who's in the better position?
I am. I'm not suggesting.
Right.
I don't even have to build an ark.
You look at even Dode. You look at from the Torah. He couldn't see beyond it. We now get to see Yosha's fulfillment of these promises and get to see all of these prophetic promises. In fact, all the prophets wrote, with the exception of Shamuel, they wrote, and Moshe, they wrote after Dode. We have all
that's
of kind of
my point.
Proof.
That's kind of my point here, is that we have this ton of information, especially
we're
now.
We're the most fortuitous generation ever.
Yeah, but they weren't. That's my point. I mean, really, you know, I mean, you think about somebody appearing before you, telling you that they're the creator of the universe. I mean, wow, you know. And
I open the Torah, and the Torah, I find the creator of the universe appearing right before my eyes, speaking to me from another dimension.
Yeah, I mean, and that's astounding that these words.
And I think and by doing it, I think I see him even more clearly than. Yashiah was able to see him.
Yeah, and that is my point, though. We have a lot more information to go with.
We do.
They didn't.
That's correct. We have vastly more information for the benefit of making connections and understanding than they did. No generation ever had the tools or the insights that we've been given.
No.
And it's extraordinary what we've been given.
I'll tell you one thing.
To study it.
I'll tell you something that else is extraordinary is how you can share all this information with people for years and they turn up talking about obeying command and laws. That's extraordinarily stupid in my estimation. And
right.
At that point, I get rid of them. But it's just amazing that people are still like that. They really are. They can't shake religion. You know that, right? I mean,
right.
You can share this information for years, and it won't even dent some people. They play along like they understand, but they don't understand it.
And yet the revelations are awesome. They're mind-numbing. They're so profound. They're so interesting. They're so well-proven. They're so insightful. They're so generous. It's
Yeah, we're coming down to the final Yovel, and he talks about a one-world government, and that's what we're watching form. I mean,
correct.
How thick do you have to be to not get that through your skull? Huh? What are the odds of that?
For him to make the 6 days of creation plus a day of rest is equivalent to the week, and how
tied to a Yovel.
And compare that to the Yovel or to the Bikray, where six steps lead to camping out with God, and Sukkah becomes equivalent with Eden. And when Yahweh comes back, he says he's going to obliterate every trace of religion and going to transform the entire earth back into the conditions of Eden. It's such a marvelous picture, portrait. And most people don't even want to hear it.
Well,
but you know something? Here's something that Larry. I mean, I'm glad that you talked to the atheist today. But here's my view of that. Is that while if somebody is open and wants to learn, I'm going to do the same thing you do. I'm going to talk to them. But if they don't want to open their minds to the truth and consider it, I don't want to waste my time with them.
Well, right, but see, this is the William had called and asked, you know,
right.
Of course, William's my good friend, and he's
right.
And he said, you know, what it was I was talking to this guy, and he was going, well, this is just your interpretation. You know, they all want to go to your interpretation. You haven't
right.
seriously looked at Yahweh's words. We're not trying to interpret anything. We're trying to look at Yahweh's words in raw form, or as close to them as you're going to
yeah.
get in English, for sure. He said, well, I know a guy who was raised in an atheist household, which I was. And you know, remember me telling you, it was the whole Orr chapter that I just, wow, I mean, I couldn't sleep for several days. I mean, this
yeah.
is real. I mean, this,
yeah.
I knew there had to be a God, but I didn't, you know, absolutely know he had proven it. And of course, now I understood that he had proven it. So to me, that's the biggest proof that you'll ever lay out in front of somebody. Okay?
Correct.
I mean, if they have a brain cell.
Correct.
And so I laid it out there, and the guy tried to say, well, that's fine, but what about a billion years from now? I said, well, you know, you got to understand, this was 3,500 years ago. He was giving this to Moshe.
Right.
So
right.
you have to go from that standpoint. And he actually tells us when the sixth day ends and the seventh day begins, which is the year 2033. I said, so it comes out to 6 days. I don't care how you cut the pie.
Right.
You know, and then he tried to make some other excuse. And I said, well, you know, he said, I don't understand your math. I said, fine, I'm going to shoot it over to William. He can print it to you and hand it to you. I handed it to a college professor. And you know what he told me? I see absolutely nothing wrong with this. And he's an atheist. He said, I see nothing wrong with this. And this is Ricky, a guy you can't get around no matter what. He's a translator.
Right.
Yeah, it's totally. There's just the whole thing is sound. Yahweh's words are clear.
Right. But you know,
look at
again from our perspective versus Moshe's. Moshe didn't understand relativity. Moshe had no ability to measure the temperature of quark confinement. He had no ability to equate the background temperature of
redshift or anything else.
Yeah, to be able to do the math to measure the background radiation in the microwave range that is still disseminating out of the Big Bang. They had no ability to ascertain that number. That it means that time moved 10 to the 12th times slower at creation than it does here on Earth.
Yes.
And then the math becomes very straightforward. You know, all you have to do is divide the, and we, you know, at this point we know that the universe is quark confinement took place somewhere around 14 to 15 billion years ago.
Math brings it out to 14.7 billion. We know that.
Right.
I mean, that's
right.
just
yeah, that's
it
right.
is.
That's
yeah.
right. And so you look at that, and you divide that by 10 to the 12th power, and you come to 6 24-hour days. And, you know, at that point, that alone should have been sufficient. But then when you have the fourth day, and the fourth day says that the greater light becomes visible as a sign for the Mikre, and you apply that to the fourth millennia of human history expelled from the garden, and you've got the greater light becoming visible in the form of Yosha to fill the first four Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah. Between those two,
then you got the temple out there, right? The home, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to give the sacrifice, you walk up 4,000 cubits.
Yeah.
And that's where you give the sacrifice. I mean, that's your 4,000. I mean, it's all right there. I get that. But then we get into hundreds and hundreds of things. But if you know, by just showing that look from the perspective of the Creator, and I think the word giant agitation may be better than Big Bang. I'm not sure. Because that's an Akkadian root word, I believe, right? And it's got to do with water too. But either way, 6 days is 6 days mathematically from the perspective of the Creator. And
but you don't like
you
that to that ancient that, history. How about this one? When you're dealing with the fact that through Yahshua, this prophet, Yahweh mm-hmm. specifically says that there is going to be a war perpetrated by Muslims, armed by the United States, fought in Greater Syria, which would include Iraq, Syria, and that whole region, and that war is going to ultimately lead to the destruction of Damascus, and that from that time, to resolve the ongoing slot of jihadi Islam, that nations like America are going to sponsor the divestiture of the West Bank to reward the terrorists, to placate them by giving them the West Bank, and that immediately thereafter there will be an onslaught of Muslims into Israel by the hundreds of millions. And then, and they said that the biggest culprit in all of this, the most adversarial nation in all this, is America. And
right.
That was penned 2,700 years ago.
You know, I even find the ants where there's she. I find the way Alexander the Great died astounding. I find so much of this astounding and so prophetic. Look, even Daniel, when he's talked about, okay, then, you know, here's going to come the Persians and the Medes, and then going to come the Greeks, and this one horn is going to knock the one with the two horns. That's obviously the Medes and the Persians. And they first started losing in a sea battle. You know, I find that's pretty weird.
Oh, yeah.
That was their first loss. And then it's going to come the Romans, and this is before any of these were capable of anything other than the Persians and the Medes.
There were no Greeks. When this was revealed,
that's right.
there were no Romans.
I understand that.
There were no Greeks. And yet, he actually uses the word for Roman for Greece to describe them.
I know this. And it's just astounding to me that people can't put two and two together. If
they have a beast that would grow out of Rome that would endure to the last of the days that is going to trample on the entire world. How that is anything other than the Roman Catholic Church. It's the only thing it grew up
And I understand that.
The only worldwide organization.
Especially based on the word parchment and all that, you know, when we're clearly talking about Pergamos, you know,
And then, you know, when he's describing the whore of Babylon, Yahweh specifically refers to the city on seven hills.
Yeah,
and then he talks about with Imperial Rome, which it grows out of, he talks about the emperors that have come and gone and died, the emperor that is, but will be. And because he's the one that is demon-possessed, and Nero's still alive at that time, but he soon would not be, but he's going to be again because the demon that possessed Nero is the same demon that's...
with Paul,
not only Paul, but so many others,
how about the flying? How about the drivers and the flying war machines?
Oh yeah, and the
airplanes.
Yeah. What about him describing every aspect of crucifixion?
Before it existed.
Before it existed, right?
Yeah, and how do the rabbis get around that one? You know what they try to do? They try to get around a word here and there. They'll take a virgin. And by the way, a virgin birth is not, I don't see why that would be so astounding to them. I mean, there's a thing called artificial insemination today. We can make a virgin give birth. That's not a big deal. Certainly the creator of the dimension can do it. I look at these things, and they want to change a word here and there, but they have a mountain of evidence to get rid of. And the fact is, they can't. They cannot get rid of all the evidence.
The dimensions of the ark, the material that the ark was constructed on, being thousands and thousands of years ahead of the naval architecture of our time. And then the flood will be initiated by an upwelling of deep seawater. and it ties in with the impact of the Burkle crater, which caused that exact event.
You know, these are all impossible.
How about, I was saying that an asteroid is going to be nudged and it's going to strike the
2029
Earth.
2029 on April 13th.
During the midpoint of the tribulation happens to be, April 13th of 2029.
Is that exactly midway through, by the way?
And then we find that and he calls it Asymptos, and we find Apophis as the asteroid that is going to, if it doesn't get nudged, which it will, is going to come by inside of our of even our satellite orbits on that exact day.
Yeah, just the gravity alone.
The 13th of 2029.
I know. And one's Greek, and one's written in Greek, and the other in Egyptian. It's the same
correct.
God, basically.
The
one of darkness.
The God of darkness and death.
Yeah. I I'm astounded that I can present all this information to somebody and they just act oblivious like an idiot. I mean, one thing about all the covenant people that I know that I've introduced Yahweh's words to and have really hung on to them, these were all people that questioned religion and wanted the truth. I mean, they actually wanted to hear the truth. I grew up in a home of atheists. I knew it was absolutely impossible for everything to pop out of nothing. It just didn't make sense. I mean, from a rational point of view, that's an insane idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not the only one that thinks that way.
No,
and so I felt like a lone guy in my household, by the way, growing up, because I just shake my head at this stuff.
Yeah.
Popping out of thin air. I've never seen anything pop out of thin air. Have you?
The spontaneous generation of life from
nothingness.
Inorganic
nothing
from nothing together is akin. In fact, it's actually far less likely than a tornado going over a junkyard and assembling a 747 that has a flight crew in it and is ready to fly.
Well, I mean, first of all, how does that material get there?
It requires faith.
No, and how does that material get there? I mean, material.
Yeah.
How did it get there? I mean, it's just all of it's insane. It's just all insane. You just can't have a dimension. And we know there's other dimensions. I mean, there's mathematical proof of that, by the way. So, I mean, there's just no way in a world for something to pop out of nothing. It just, it's never happened.
It doesn't happen.
There's nothing in my life that leads me to believe that can happen. It's just nothing.
Yeah, nothing comes from nothing. Nothing ever will.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
How hard is that?
Yeah, we were designed. We were designed for a purpose, to be God's children.
Yeah, and then you're always talking about the Cambrian explosion where every animal phyla shows up all at once, and we all know, and I'm not sure what...
There hasn't been one since then.
Right, and I'm not sure what's higher on the evolutionary scale, a grasshopper or a cricket, but, you have to have transitional things in there, and there are none. I mean, that's it. They just all appeared. And if they all appeared all at once, that means they were created. I mean, there's just no other way around it. But I think people are embarrassed. You know, one of Satan's great, great schemes wasn't just his counterfeits aren't all that great, but one of his great schemes was making Yahweh's words look stupid.
Yeah.
You know, like worldwide flood. You know, the first man was Adam 6,000 years ago. All these religious concepts that are inculcated into religious thought processes,
making a mockery of thoughtfulness.
Yeah, as you put, yes. And so when you start looking at Yahweh's words, and you find out, well, wait a minute. First of all, if nobody ever thought of this, I guess, and until somebody came along and said, hey, they put a mark on Cain's head. He was afraid. There were people outside. There was already people out there, stupid. Well, of course, duh. What was I thinking when I blew right by that? You know, and once you start pointing these things out to people, and they still want to keep their eyes closed, I've got no use for them.
Right.
I really don't.
Never have them. Right. Yeah, there's a reason that the covenant family is small. And really, it's going to be a size that will be comfortable, enjoyable, but not overwhelming. You know, it's when we're in eternity with Yahweh, there's going to be tens of thousands of souls, and that's going to be plenty of people to interact with, but it's not going to be overwhelming where there's millions. You'll get to know everybody.
Yeah, and these are all very special people, by the way. I mean,
right.
They really are.
We all share the same thing in common. We all like the same things, value the same things. And that's the reason why
we're... Other
than golf. Other than golf.
Well, I'll give you some lessons and maybe you'll...
Okay, there you go. Well, guys, I'm going to go treat my poison ivy and take my final to Benadryl, and I'll be sawing logs here just momentarily. Yes.
Sounds fun.
Oh,
it was a pleasure, and I hope I wasn't too boisterous at the start of this or anything. I just really, it's just something that eats me when I see these people pulling this nonsense, and it's just becoming a
lot wrong,
stupid.
Yeah, and as I've said, Larry, I sense just the plain in your face evaluation of what happened and our ridiculous response is so toxic, so demeaning to everyone, and so incredibly injurious to any credibility the government and its military and its police have, and that's more than enough for people to reject. The fact that some of it may be staged is that just shows how stunningly unperceptive we are.
Yeah, they are staged.
But even without staging, the national response to what happened in Orlando, the national response to what happened on 9/11, the national response to all of these things.
To Watertown. Put us under martial law. USA. USA. Because a 19-year-old. I've just had it with all their stories. If they have to have crisis actors, what kind of story is it? And they do have crisis actors.
Well,
there's no question about
that. They create crisis to gain control. The Gulf of Tonkin. The sinking of the Lusitania. They need to rally people together.
Pearl Harbor.
Right. Mm-hmm. To achieve what they want, which is more military, more police, more spies, more
control. But I want to throw this at you guys before we're off the air. Let's assume that what they're saying is true. And let's assume it takes cops 2 hours. These are trained guys with vests and helmets on and shields. It takes 2 hours to get into a club to put a stop to a vicious murderer. Okay, let's say that. How does that give them a right to take guns? I mean, that's more of a reason for me to keep a gun.
Absolutely.
Think about it.
Yeah, how does
just stupid?
That's the best argument I've heard for having a concealed carry permit.
All right, but how in the world is it that 300 people inside of a bar can't take down
overwhelm one guy?
I mean,
they could throw chairs at him.
If they threw a chair at the guy, he could not possibly get him off.
Throw glasses. You're being able to glass.
That's a cowboy movie. Behind a bar.
All I can say is let someone try one of those down here in Texas.
Throw a weary bottle at him and light him on fire.
Good luck.
How would that work? That could work.
I've got a better idea. Claim to engage in Yahweh's mission.
And claim the
91st Psalm. And you could walk right up to the man with the gun, and he could fire 1,000 shots right at your heart.
And he'd never hit you.
Thing
is Malak.
It's a conspiracy jam, I'm sure.
Malak or real?
Yeah, that's right.
So that is a better...
I like that one. That's a better answer.
Right.
Well, that's a better scenario.
Better than all other tactics.
Like, why would they?
But even these idiots that aren't with Yahweh could have done that. I mean, I'm telling you, you said it. How did 200 people in a bar allow one guy to with one gun? I mean, that's just
he had to reload.
He's got to reload sometime. Yeah. I mean,
correct.
At that point, he should be dead. You know.
Right.
But anyway.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
You get well, and the rest of y'all, Shabbat Shalom.
Talk to you guys next week.
All right. Good night, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Night.